March 30th, 2024, Veronica Butler, 27 years old, a mother of four, and her friend, Julian Kelly, 39, from Kansas, were traveling together to pick up Veronica's children to go to a birthday party. They never arrived. Now, y'all, we have got somebody boots on the ground, literally. She wasn't there last week. She wasn't there, you know, 2 days ago. She's there right this minute. Laura Engel. You can find her at Laura Engel on X and Laura Engel TV on Instagram. Please follow her. She is doing some live feeds that are a money tree for us to understand this scene out of Oklahoma, what it looks like, and perhaps what the scene looks like can tell us who did it. Laura, thank you so much for joining us. Now, I gotta ask you, the two women were driving from Kansas to Oklahoma and they just vanished. And then law enforcement was able to locate the abandoned car off a desolate road 3 miles from where they were supposed to meet up and get the children.
And you know, Cheryl, when we first heard that, when I first heard, that the vehicle that Veronica Butler was driving in, that she was, it was her vehicle, she was the driver from what we've learned. And I thought it was going to be on the side of the highway, you know, like you pull over, you have car trouble, maybe you ran out of gas, maybe you pulled over to check the directions on your phone. But this was Road L and Highway 95, and I thought it was just at an intersection. But where the vehicle was found was 1,000 feet in on this dirt road. And when we had dropped a pin to the location where we knew the car was, and as we were driving, I thought, wow, you know, we were going down the road and it's like, this is much further off the beaten path, literally, than we thought. And this was a dirt road, but county roads, if you've ever been in the country, you know what these look like. You know, it's just a dirt road with some tall grass on each side. And then we came upon a yellow marker with like pretty yellow ribbon on a stick. And then right near there, there was a white cross with the women's name written on it with yellow ribbons and some bumblebees and some decorations on it. And I'm not sure who left it there, but it was not right off the road. It was down the road a bit.
So it would appear to you that whoever drove that did so deliberately for that distance.
Yes.
Okay.
Because that's not, it's not something that you would, somebody who said, well, do you mean like it was far enough? Maybe they were turning around. No, there's no way. You could turn around easily right off the side of the road. This was 1,000, and my GPS told me that. I have it on recording as we were turning left. Mm-hmm. Your destination is 1,000 feet as we were turning off of the road onto Road L off of Highway 95.
And to our knowledge, the car didn't have a flat tire. It wasn't out of gas. The hood wasn't up. So even if you were having trouble, you would be on the side of 95. You wouldn't be 1,000 feet in the middle of nowhere where they're not going to see you from the, what would we consider in this situation, the main road.
That's right.
So even on 95, when you did one of your live feeds, which was so good, if you did a 360, you can see for 100 miles and there's nothing.
And what's so interesting to me, this is actually my first time, I think, in Oklahoma, the first time I've been here, especially in the panhandle. When we have open roads in California, where I'm from, and my cousin is a cattle rancher, sure, there's a lot of open space, but you've got hills. They're not super mountainous in the Sacramento area, but you know, you've got some hills, you're going up and down the oak trees. This is flat. It is flat as flat can be. And we've actually put a drone up so we could show our viewers on News Nation and, you know, everybody on social what things look like, because not only do you see the wide open space of the farmland, you see the direction of the asphalt of Highway 95 and the other connecting highways. But you also can see the industrial pig farms. And when I heard pig farms that were in the area, that I was thinking, you know, fences and pigs and mud, but they're actually like silver roofs, metal roofs that you can, that's a long row. That's a really actually a massive area that is the industrial pig farm with big, large pools of water right and back. So the drone gave us the ability to see what that nearest industrial pig farm looked like. Then you, if you're going down the road from where the car was found, you've got the pig farm, then you keep going 3 miles and you've got that abandoned gas station at Four Corners, which is, I mean, it looks like something out of Central Casting. It's, you know, tumbleweeds and, you know, the windows look like they're just darkened and dusty and dirty, and the gas pump is all dilapidated. And that was supposed to be the meeting spot.
And did it, you know, strike you as odd that that would be a meeting spot to exchange children, especially if you're having custody issues, I'll say?
Yeah. Well, I think that if you, you know, we've been talking so much about the terrain and the desolation, it's really, I guess it's, you know, it's the point where there's some actual concrete to stand on, a little bit, or hardened dirt to stand and pull over off of the path that the big rigs are flying down. And this is an area where you could, you know, have a meetup, because there's just, we keep saying this, there's not a lot out there. There's just barbed wire fences and tall grass and cows. And here's a spot that's halfway. It's supposed to be the middle ground of where Veronica Butler lived in Kansas and where the grandmother lived in Oklahoma. That was the idea, meet in the middle.
Okay. Well, let's talk a little bit about where they came from and where they were going. So Elkhart, Kansas has a population of less than 2,000 people, about 1,800 and some change. Mm-hmm. Eva, Oklahoma has a population of 261. So they went from a small town to an itty bitty town. So I'm going to say your suspect pool shrinks, because I would think between those two small populated towns is nothing.
That's right. There's absolutely nothing. And, you know, that's when your heart beats fast. I mean, it did for me when we'll get to that in a minute. But like, when you realize, if I have car trouble and if my cell phone stops working, which is the case for many reporters that have been out here, and we've all been telling each other, make sure you have a lot of gas. Don't go out there with a half tank.
Yep.
Make sure that your phone is charged. Make sure that you've got you know, obviously we're going into a situation where things have happened, but I was given the advice to make sure I essentially filed a flight plan, is what I've been calling it, where I had to tell people where I was going. I actually went so far as to tell my boss what my license plate number of my rental car was. That was just out of an abundance of caution because of what we were dealing with. But if you're a local, you know, you're just driving down the road, you want to make sure you take those precautions. But between A and B and C, there's nothing.
There's nothing. So again, your suspect is going to either be somebody that knows that you were going to be on that road on that day during that time, or a trucker, somebody that just happened upon you and thinks, hey, this is an easy mark, even though there's two people in the car.
Yeah. And we've talked to people who know the area well, and they said everybody is, you know, going with the direction of, it's probably, look, if something that bad happens, if you're talking about finding a car that's abandoned with two women, the wife of a local pastor and this young woman going to meet her 6 and 8 year old child, and these people just vanish and there's a sign of, you know, there's foul play. And we've heard that there was possibly a hammer that was found in the car. It sounds like there was blood. They're saying it was suspicious and foul play, but that's kind of the word on the street. You're thinking to yourself, when things like this happen, it sounds like it's personal. But the locals that know the area say, hold on a second. You should also know that there's a lot of human trafficking in this area. There's a lot of unsolved murders in this area because of the remoteness, because there are not, the only witnesses are the cattle. So there's just a kind of a confluence of different things that we need to look at. It is easy because, you know, this custody battle was so bitter. But there are other factors to look at. The trucker, which is right on the money, you got to bring that up because those truckers are going up and down those highways the whole time that we were there. And then the human trafficking angle and the gun running and the drugs, there's a lot of that going on. Maybe it's all combined, you know, maybe it's a little bit of all of it. We just don't know because the OSBI isn't saying much on that.
Let's just go with there is a hammer, and there was other evidence in the car that they were in grave danger. So let's just assume there was blood. In that, if there's a hammer, you're going to be able to have touch DNA. You could possibly have a bloody fingerprint on it. The fact that the person left it behind, they may not be a pro. The fact that they used a hammer at all may indicate they're not a pro, because if you're trying to traffic somebody, the last thing you want is them bleeding from the head because you just bashed them with a hammer. You know, it's going to make things more complicated. Also, if this is a pro or one person in a truck, they're not going to drive 3 miles and then go 1,000 feet off the roadway to hide a car and then run back to their truck. They risk being seen. And then that leaves you, where are the victims? Usually, if it's a stranger, they don't have to take two victims and drive them a long distance and then dispose of them. Normally, these truckers, as you know, get somebody, do what they do, and throw them on the side of the road and keep moving.
Right. You know, I was talking to one of the friends that I met in the women's hometown of Hugoton, and I said, can your mind go to somewhere that there's somewhere that we haven't thought of? You know, is there a scenario where they were abducted, that they are being held somewhere in one of these barns or silos that are everywhere? Because if that's me, if this is my friend that I'm worried about, that's what I'm hoping for. We're hoping that they've been taken and kidnapped, but I haven't come across one person, loved one, close, or just a neighbor in this town that thinks that there's any other scenario other than this probably is not going to turn out well.
I would have to agree with everybody in town, because that's what I was going to ask you, like what the vibe is of the town. I mean, they're not, to me, operating like there's a crazy person on the loose. They're not operating like this person could come back or is living among us. They're acting like, we kind of have an idea. And that's how I feel. I feel like I've kind of got an idea, but you almost have to start with family. You have to do that. You've got to rule them out, because again, I want to know who set up this meeting date on this time and that location, because that narrows down. You ain't talking about a handful of people that would know that was going to happen. If there's grandma, if there's a babysitter, the biological father, the two husbands, I mean, you're talking about 6 people max that, we're going to exchange at whatever time and at this location. So the fact that some stranger would intersect these two women 3 miles from their destination, not unheard of, but still pretty astronomical.
And you know what else we have to look at? And I've brought this up before on air, is this court document I'm holding in my hand right now. It was filed, it's stamped from the court clerk on March 20th, 2024. And this is the defendant's, Veronica Butler's, amended motion for increased visitation with the subject minor children. And what this paperwork tells us is that she was fighting tooth and nail to get more visitation with her children, unsupervised visitation with her children. And there was a court hearing scheduled for the middle of April on this. And in this court filing, when you flip through the pages, it describes from the point of view from Veronica Butler's attorney, all of the different times that grandma, Tiffany Adams, has not followed the court's rules on bringing the children to a location where she could visit with her mother. And it details, you know, she says that she was sick and she, you know, you have to give, there's rules with child custody. If you're not going to make a visitation, you have to tell somebody. If you're not going to make the visitation on Saturday, you have to tell somebody by Wednesday. And there's a list of all these different times that they say that the grandmother did not abide by the court order. And missed week after week after week of Veronica trying to see her children. So, you know, we talked to a friend who saw Veronica the day before she went missing, and she told me that she was so excited. It was her daughter's, you know, they were going to celebrate the birthday. And you know what, Cheryl, I keep thinking about that. If you're a mom and you're going to go celebrate your kid's birthday and pick them up for a birthday party, what's in your car?
Yes.
Maybe a cake.
Yep.
Maybe balloons. Maybe a present, mm-hmm. maybe something fun, maybe a lovey, maybe a little stuffed animal. Like I know what it's, you know, I know what it's like to be a mom and have stuff for your kids. Like I just keep thinking about what was in the car for those children. But anyway, looking at the court documents, this was heating up. This is the point. This was heating up. These court documents that we have found from this county in Oklahoma go back. I mean, we're looking at court documents back to 2015 on the child custody issue. And with each court filing, it's more and more contentious.
9 years of fighting. So now you're getting into motive.
Right.
I mean, if you and I were prosecutors and we're building a case, this sounds like motive.
When I look at the very first page of this court filing, my heart sinks because there was another court-approved supervisor that was supposed to be the person that did the majority of these visits with Veronica and her children. Her name's Cheryl. And so Cheryl is the main person who's supposed to be doing all this. Then it lists three other names right under Cheryl's approved supervisor's name. One is Nyleve, the other is Robin, and the other is Jillian. Those are the three alternates. So there's four people here that were court-approved supervisors for this, and Jillian Kelly is the last one on the list.
And so that's why she was in the car. So Veronica was doing the right thing, what the court asked her to do. Jillian was doing the right thing, what her friend in the court asked her to do for these children. Laura, let me ask you something. Who alerted the police? Do we know?
That is such a great question. I asked the OSBI PIO, public information officer, who is it that called? Did somebody call 911? We don't know that somebody called 911. They might have just said, we need a welfare check, whatever. It's my understanding that it was Veronica's fiance who was worried and took the drive and found the car. That is what we are hearing. It's not what's been confirmed. But the other thing that I said to the attorney for Veronica, who I'm in touch with, and to the OSBI, I said, am I to believe that there was a grandmother standing at that abandoned gas station holding the hands of two little kids? Is that what I'm supposed to, you know, is that what I'm supposed to be imagining right now? There are people that told me that they don't, this is hearsay. It's hearsay. But there are people that told me that they don't believe that grandma ever left the house.
So you've done, again, some boots on the ground investigating, and you went to Veronica's house. Did you see anything that struck you as, hey, that could be helpful? Or, hey, I wonder if law enforcement knows this, or somebody told me A and I checked it out and it looked accurate. Anything that you can tell us about where Veronica started from?
Right. So we were in her hometown and I did meet up with her friend in a park. And I said, can you just show me where she lived so that I can get an eyeball? Because there's been so much talk about, you know, obviously there's no cameras on the route she was taking in the middle of nowhere, but were there cameras in town on the route she took out of town? Or were there cameras on her street? And so I took a drive with a respectful distance down her street and was able to observe her house. And there were two that I could see cameras on the outside of her house, one on the left and one on the right by the driveway. And then, yeah, so I'm hoping that they were working. I'm hoping that, I don't know, you know, they pick up everything, right? So was she talking about something that may have happened? I heard that she got a phone call before she took that drive. That wasn't a good one. So was she, you know, when you're going out to your car, you're talking to your friend, you're talking to whoever. So what could that camera have picked up? Not just of her getting in her car, but what was she saying, walking from her front door, possibly holding things for her kids, going to her vehicle in the driveway or out on the street? Was there anything that was picked up in terms of a clue? Because there are two cameras on the front of her house. Around the back of the house, the fence is gone, but that's just the nature of that neighborhood, I think, and some of the some of the fence line that they have. The fence was down, and I could see that, you know, the friend had told me that she had planned on taking her children out on a boat that weekend, on that Easter weekend. And there was a boat in the backyard that I could see from the alley. So I didn't see any cameras in the back. I saw a trampoline. I saw a basketball hoop and the boat, and a, it looked like a trailer. So a clear signs of just, you know, life interrupted, and what she was hoping to do with her kids that weekend.
Were there any sections of roadway where you lost complete service? There was no cell service at all. Any of the pertinent locations regarding this case?
There was one section between where the vehicle was found and the gas station where I was having trouble, and my bars on my phone were dwindling down, you know, as you drive down these roads and you're looking, saying, please, please keep, give me my three bars. Don't go down to one. And there was one point where I got down to one bar. I have pretty strong cell service, but it did go down to one, and it made me really nervous.
So let's just say there's two people involved, two strangers in a truck. The women get to the deserted gas station and pull in. Somebody pulls in behind them, gets in their car, drives them 3 miles back, and then down Road L, then gets them in the other vehicle, and the four of them take off after some exchange of something with a hammer. You're talking about a quick exchange, right? And you're talking about, again, somebody risk being seen. So here's the deal. Did grandma, do we know if she were there waiting, or the babysitter or whoever was taking the children to meet up? Did she start texting her? Because let's just say she's the ex-mother-in-law that doesn't think she's any good for these children. And when she's a no-show, it seems like she would immediately notify the court. It seems like she would immediately start texting Jillian. It seems like she would immediately start getting in touch with the guardian ad litem or whoever to say, I told y'all she was no good and she didn't show up today and she won't return my calls or text messages. Did that happen? Do we know?
We just don't know. I mean, the OSBI hasn't told us anything. I will say that I talked to another friend today who didn't want to go on camera, and she told me that, you know, the question has been, were the phones found? Were the purses found? And, you know, that's been, you know, the OSBI just, they're doing a very good job of keeping the information under wraps, right?
Oh, no, I think they should play this close to the vest.
Right,
I think
they shouldn't be telling us, right? And but everybody wants to know, because, and for us, for news reporters, you know, we want to help. We want to shine a light. You know, I came marching in here into Oklahoma thinking that, you know, I was going to stumble upon a grid search, a canine search, a command post. It is zip. There's nothing. It was quiet. There is nothing going on except for two people that are volunteers that are out there on horseback and driving around, you know, talking to ranchers and trying to help. And that's what we're here to do. You know, what we show their pictures, we give the descriptions, we talk to the family members. Keeping the story alive brings out tips, brings out people that can give us a clue. It's part of what we do. And we just have been stonewalled with this particular case. But to your point, we just don't know if the phones were in the car. I heard that somebody said that they were missing Veronica, and this is, you know, 5 days in, and sent her a Facebook message, you know, just a like a DM, and just to say, hey, I hope you're okay. And this is, you know, what somebody told me. I don't have this verified, but this is one of the stories that we've been told, and that they looked at the message and it said red, like the message bubble changed. Now, is it Veronica checking her message? Maybe not. It could be the police, right? It could be the police that have her phone.
Sure. They could have the phone.
And they're watching to see, they're looking at the digital footprint. They're looking at the messages that she had. They're looking to see all of her social media. But it was just one of those, you know, that's just one of those things that happens that makes your heart stop when you're hoping that your friend is going to be found okay. But those are the types of little nuggets, little stories that we're hearing with so many people so frustrated that just want to know, where are they? Are they okay? If they're not okay, please tell us so that we can help the family.
Again, understanding that this is a small town and lots of wide open spaces between buildings and stores and that sort of thing. But you and I both, on multiple occasions, have been to Delphi, and I could not go anywhere. There wasn't a flyer. Are there flyers up? Has there been a vigil? I know the churches have gotten together to pray, but is there any organization about putting their faces out there?
There was a flyer. I put that on my Instagram. There was a flyer at a gas station, but it was on the door and it was on the counter. And I asked the young lady that was working as a cashier, I said, you know, has anybody come in with tips? She said, no, we were just asked to put this out. And the flyer was actually put out because I'd asked the OSBI for a copy of the flyer. They said it didn't come from us. It came from the highway patrol. So I've only seen two flyers. I haven't seen their faces splashed everywhere, but again, it's desolate, but in town, I haven't even really seen them. But what I have seen is yellow ribbons everywhere, yellow ribbons of hope on the trees and the telephone poles. That's what you see everywhere.
You know, there's not a lot of information being shared, which is the right call. But in any case like this, when you have got a ugly custody battle, the suspects are going to be the ex-mother-in-law. Is it possibly a murder for hire? Who wanted her gone? Who would benefit the most from her being gone? And then who's most likely to help? Does the biological father have siblings or cousins or a best friend that might help get rid of them? Is it a trucker? Is it a stranger? And so this needs to be a parallel investigation. I believe the electronics are going to be key. I believe what was left in that car is going to be key. The hammer and the cell phone would be the money tree, in my opinion.
That's what we're hoping for. We're hoping for information. We're hoping for anything. And just, you know, the desperation of the people that we spoke to. And again, no, it's incredible, the people that will not go on camera, but people are really afraid, really a real sense of fear here. This isn't like the other missing persons cases I've covered, but the sense of fear, the talk of sovereign citizens, and that's, I keep hearing that over and over again. I keep hearing about God's misfits. I keep hearing about different groups that are out here in the country, and people are just, whatever connections there could be, and I'm not saying there is, I'm just saying that these are the types of words that are being spoken and whispered because people are saying, I don't want to say anything because, you know, the sovereign citizens that are out here. And, you know, these are people that don't believe that they're, you know, they don't adhere to the law. They don't adhere to God's laws. They feel that they can do what they want. And that's where the sense of fear is coming from, that it's a tangible sense that I can feel.
We do not know what happened to them. But I will say for the record, how lucky that sovereign citizen would be that they came along and the victim that they chose had a meet and date, time and location that they were 3 miles away from when they were stopped by the sovereign citizen. They were going to miss a critical court date. They had somebody with means, motive, and opportunity, especially the motive, wanting these children, basically trying to raise them right now, not sharing them, not showing up, even though the court has directed them to do so. They have an ex they've been fighting with for 9 years. I mean, that's literally the entire life of the two younger children. It was her car, which somebody in the family would recognize from a distance. That's a lot for me to absorb to say, yeah, none of that's got anything to do with it. It's probably this person who's never met her, never seen her, and took the risk to say, hey, I'm going to kidnap two women and leave enough evidence in the car that OSBI thinks something terrible has happened.
And just, again, I can't help but I'm sitting here staring at this court document. How are these other three women, they're all women who are the court-approved supervisors of this exchange and visitation. How are you feeling right now if your name is Cheryl, Nylene, Robin? Jillian was the last on, it was Easter weekend, right? So a lot of people might've been out of town. I don't have any knowledge of that, but I'm just thinking of, you know, they probably ticked down the list, and it was the pastor's wife who on a Saturday before Easter said, I can do it.
And so again, I would love to talk to the other women on that list. What was grandma like to work with? Was she difficult? Was she kind? Was she easygoing? Y'all have dealt with her. Y'all have showed up to visitations. They need to be interviewed immediately. Laura, I cannot thank you enough. And again, y'all, I've just got to direct y'all to Laura Ingle TV on Instagram and Laura Ingle on X. Her stuff is top drawer. She's a pro. You've heard her. You know, she won't even let me get too far out of bounds without bringing it back correctly. So, Laura, thank you so much. You stay safe out there, and we will talk to you again soon. And if anything breaks, honey, let me know.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm going to end Zone 7 the way that I always do, with a quote. Narcissists don't co-parent. They counter-parent. They don't care about the collateral damage done to the children, as long as it hurts you. Unknown. I'm Cheryl McCollum, and this is Zone 7.